Welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host, El Jefe James Kincaid. With me tonight, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
I just want to say Merry Christmas to you and to the listeners, since this is our last episode before then.
That is correct.
Or we may squeeze one more in.
We got one more coming.
Are we going to do it this week?
Yeah.
Only time will tell.
Well, if you can.
Well, yeah, I guess now I can, now that I'm off.
Yeah, that's right. So many people taking time off in December, and we already took enough time off on this podcast. Welcome back to Lucha Lowdown, everybody.
Wait, then I'm taking back my Merry Christmas. I'm going to put it back in my pocket, and I'll bring it back out next episode.
You're taking back your Merry Christmas. Okay.
I am. I'm taking it back from you, and I'm taking it back from all the listeners.
All right.
Dan, you didn't hear it.
Well, welcome back to Lucha Lowdown.
Merry Festivus.
Apologies for the delay, the absence of the lowdowns the last couple weeks. We've had a lot going on, be it with my being sick and El Guapo over there just being slammed with modeling work. So we got busy, you know. So we missed a couple weeks of the lowdown. I apologize for that. I really wanted to make it work, man. Whatever was going around was pretty rough, and man, Jeff's photo shoots are just phenomenal, so I know he couldn't pass on those. I think he was in Ibiza last time. But welcome back, everyone.
Is that her name?
Oh, zing. Very nice. No, that was good. You don't have to feel ashamed about that. We are going to be giving you a double dose of the lowdown, then. We're going to be talking about two episodes in one podcast.
A dose of dose, if you will.
Yes. that's not bad. We're going to be talking about the episodes The Bulls of Boyle Heights and then En Las Sombras. We'll start with, obviously, what came first, which was The Bulls of Boyle Heights. And we get Angelico with El Jefe. Well, first of all, what did you think of this episode overall, Jeff?
I liked it a lot because I like this new tournament format that they're doing. Mm-hmm.
I think,
and then also the return of Angelico, even just in a vignette, got me really excited.
Which is exactly where we started with him talking with Dario Cueto and how he wanted Johnny Mundo, but El Jefe was saying
title shot or not, just wanted Mundo in the ring.
Yeah, which we've seen happen at Lucha En Vivo and Escondido. But he said Johnny's lawyer was making that difficult, which got me thinking, because then Angelico was like, well, you know, I did get injured twice here, you know, while working for you. And I'm thinking in my head, I was like, yeah, this is an underground fighting ring, though. I don't think either of them should have a legal leg to stand on, no?
Yeah. It's funny the way you put it, because it's true. I was like, how is Dario even paying them? I would assume under the table, because, yeah, this is like underground street fighting.
Yeah. I mean, there shouldn't be much of a paper trail, or else, Dario, you're not doing this right.
Not all of them fail to pay taxes, because, like, one of them's a goddamn dragon.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you have like witches and
you got
dragons,
witches, zombies, we got phoenixes,
intergalactic time
dragons.
Travelers.
Yeah, it's because you're one of the pseudo normal characters doesn't mean that you have like a 401k plan or
yeah,
anything
lay
like.
Off you South African string bean. But it was great to see Angelico and then him, you know, give Dario the business, only for Dario to capitulate, saying he's doing this tournament, the Battle of the Bulls. And that he will put him in one of the matches next week, which the winner will get a title shot eventually, whether it be Johnny Mundo or perhaps somebody else. We'll find out. But I did like when Angelico and Twitter and social media all sort of had the same reaction. But when Angelico was leaving, he's like, you know, Johnny, if I do win, Johnny Mundo is not going to need a lawyer. He's going to need an undertaker. And of course, I was like, ooh, Undertaker reference. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny. But what I appreciate most.
It's a cool line, honestly.
No, it was a good line. Although Dario just goes stupid. Which, I mean, it's good. But I like that segment. Like you said, it was good just seeing Angelico back in action again. One of the things that you texted me about, I noticed upon first watching as well, was. At the commentary desk, Jeff, there was something a little amiss. Was there not? what was going on?
Vampiro was wearing a shirt where the logo had to be blurred out.
It's just so random. And I think you asked the proper questions. Like, how does he wear a shirt to where that becomes a thing? I mean, it must have been something.
Where they allow him to film wearing that shirt. Like, he can show up to work like that, whatever, you know? But somebody has to step in and go, you have to change.
My guess is, My guess is that it was something probably that they thought was innocuous that maybe somebody like realized later on might be an issue. That's the only thing I can think of. But yeah, Vampiro's blurred shirt was very noticeable from the jump. Well,
I should
there.
Say so. He's got a broad muscular chest.
Yeah, and it's like just it's just like a white T-shirt with a big old blur smudge on it. It's like the old land speeder with the Vaseline smudge underneath it. Although I didn't find that really noticeable as a kid or as an adult, and I think it's awesome. But we are getting the first match of the Battle of the Bulls right here off the jump. And I got to say, just in general, and Jeff, I think we may have even talked about this, the love of tournaments that we both have in pro wrestling, like King of the Ring was consistently, as a kid, one of my favorite pay-per-views. WrestleMania 4, when Macho Man won the World Heavyweight Championship in WWF, was one of my favorite WrestleManias because I like the whole tournament feel of it. The movie The Quest is one of my favorite Van Damme movies. It's an excellent tournament. And so
Bloodsport.
Yeah, and Bloodsport. Yeah, so I enjoy all of those things. You feel the same.
Oh, obviously. Yeah, no, I mean, that's part of the reason why Van Damme is one of my favorite action stars. It's just fighting tournaments in most of his films. I like the idea of a tournament being all in one night, like a King of the Ring sort of thing, or even like UFC 1. And then I also like the idea of consequences carrying over, which is basically what we get with the Battle of the Bulls. Also, I like anything that's animal related with Lucha Underground. So bringing another animal into it, I think, makes a lot of sense. I don't know. I just get excited.
Yeah, no, I think that's very valid. So the first Battle of the Bulls match, so the way this tournament works, it's a series of fatal four-ways with the winners of each one, single elimination fatal four-way, with the winner then moving on to a final fatal four-way elimination match for the title shot. So in this one, we got Cage, who Matt Stryker's one word to describe Cage was power. We got Tejano, and the one word that Stryker used to describe him was grit. And we got Joey Ryan, which Matt Stryker's like, well, he's kind of a fill-in-the-blank. He's the intangible, I suppose, as Joey Ryan's just oiling himself up. And then Dr. Wagner Jr., Melissa didn't get to announce him, and Matt Stryker then said, well, if he was to give him a word, it would be precision. But I did like how when Famous B was going to do the announcement for Dr. Wagner Jr., Cage just interrupted and took Famous B's head off. What'd you think of that?
I actually wrote that down. That was one of my favorite things of the match because everybody just fucking hates Famous B. And I
true heel, like you often
Cage,
say.
Cage annihilated him a couple times in this match, and like Famous B really sells it because he gets decimated every time Cage touches him.
Yeah, he did. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. I think this was my favorite Battle of the Bulls match of this night, in my opinion. I thought they really did a lot of cool stuff in this one. The machine moonsault that Cage did down out to the floor was awesome, and I liked Stryker on commentary just saying, "Soon machines will run the world, don't you know?" And I don't know, it made me think of Westworld, so that was good too. And then the second rope sort of suplex. Cage was doing a lot of crazy stuff in this match. Like he really brought it. I liked everything going on in it. What'd you think of it?
Well, what I liked about this match was, once again, we had Tejano and Cage in the ring together, but it didn't have anything to do with their best of five series. I like these breaks in the best of five series to kind of help build up the tension some more. The two of them couldn't get enough of beating the crap out of each other, which was great, and kind of helps the story along there without one of them having to, you know, win a match in that tournament. And then also, and maybe we'll get back to this when we're talking about the second episode and who everyone is in the final match for the Battle of the Bulls, but I have a theory of something that might happen based on the result of this match.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's something that came to me today, actually, when I was second watching. Also, I was just going to say, dude, kudos to Joey Ryan. I thought he kicked a lot of ass in this match. He clearly was like the underdog.
I agree with you. Well, yeah, I think even Matt Stryker called him the Gonzaga of this match.
Yeah, he did, which, yeah, Vampiro did not pick up on.
Vampiro
that
no-sold that reference incredibly hard. But, you know, I wrote down Joey Ryan is a delight in my notes, and he really is. I love that guy, and I think he's a good in-ring worker. His character is awesome. I really enjoy watching Joey Ryan work, so I completely agree with you. And I liked the beautiful Brenda basically yelling at him, saying, "You sleazy SOB," repeatedly at Joey Ryan. I really appreciated that.
I wish she had gotten a chance to, like, sexually harass her off, like, outside the ring or something like
that. That would have been good.
I want Joey Ryan interacting with the women as much as possible. I think it's funny.
I do,
also,
too.
Maybe you tell me when this was. Was there a Yakety Yak reference from Stryker? Because he said, "Take out the papers in the trash."
Oh, I don't know. Actually, I think that might have been in the spot. He might have said that on this move, which was, to me, the move of the match, was when it might have been when Cage did the double fallaway slam to Wagner and Famous B. I think it might have been there.
I don't remember. I just thought it was really funny.
Yeah. That spot was crazy, by the way. That is some super strength from the Machine Cage that he showed off in this match.
Famous B went flying.
Yeah, he did.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. That ridiculous is the right word for it. That to me was the standout moment of the match, because I was like, holy God, Famous B just got killed.
And I don't think it was that long after the Tower of Doom thing. So, I mean, it was just a couple of times where Cage was just, like, ravaging the other opponents. You know, I mean, he is a machine.
Yeah,
so.
And he got to do, like, the drill claw suplex to Joey Ryan. And Cage was really showing out in this match, too. And then even, like to your point earlier, they were playing off the whole ultimate opportunity thing, is that that Tejano did the work, but Cage stole the victory in this at the end. What did you think of that?
I think that helps with the story. And then maybe Tejano did the work, but like you were just saying, Cage had an amazing showing in this match. So I did not begrudge him at all for winning. It's not what I expected. Once again, I thought Tejano was going to win. I just feel that guy's due for something.
He really looked
also,
good in this
I
match,
thought,
too.
You know, Battle of the Bulls, guy's a cowboy. You know, I was like, who should win Battle of the Bulls more than this rough and tumble cowboy?
Lucha keeping you on your toes.
Seriously.
You know, what's funny is that I thought, because of the Ultimate Opportunity series, I didn't think Cage or Tejano was going
to
get a win here.
Yeah, neither one would be able to win.
Yeah, I thought we might have seen Joey Ryan slither in there and get the upset victory, but I was...
season 3 MVP, Dr. Wagner.
Yeah, or that. You know what I was thinking about tonight as I was rewatching and taking notes? Is that we still haven't seen King Cuerno against spoiler in either one of these episodes. We have not seen him yet. What the hell is going on?
There's a few things that I'm waiting to happen in this season. I'll bring up the other one. I think it's during one of the vignettes. But yeah, dude, Cuerno, come on, man.
Dude, I miss the guy.
You. Yeah, I just miss him. He was cool. And the Battle of the Bulls, that's right up his alley. He definitely would have been in this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. His presence is sorely missed in the temple. God, he's one of my favorite guys. So for him not to be in season 3 yet, I mean, I guess they're really putting over that whole death match thing. So at this point, the stipulation is all too real.
I guess that means we'll see Puma in like 6 years then? Or?
I guess, yeah, maybe. But yeah, so Cage stole one right at the end. Playing off that whole hype. Maybe Tejano's going to screw Cage later on. Who knows? But that wouldn't be very babyface of him, which Tejano still very much is. The next thing we got was Sexy Star with Dario Cueto. And, you know, Dario was buttering her up, talking about how, you know, he feels like she got screwed by the Worldwide Underground and everything. And, you know, he wants to offer her a unique opportunity. And immediately I just like, uh-oh, Sexy, watch out. That's usually a monkey paw wish. And then just as soon as, like,
it's never good, man.
He offers the title shot, and it's like, well, and there's the other shoe dropping. Either you beat PJ Black tonight or you never get another title shot ever again. So it's like, God dang. What did you think of this whole stipulation and Sexy and Dario's interaction?
I thought it was an awesome stipulation. I just feel, from someone who's watching a story, though, Sexy Star can't lose the match then.
Yeah, well, that...
you can't have it where she could never go for the title again.
Yeah, that is a bad deal. You're right from that perspective. But in this vignette, Jeff and I, you and I talked about off air, one of the greatest lines that Dario has dropped since "Have Your Churro and Eat It Too." And he's talking about PJ Black and how he's the only one of those gringos that Sexy Star hasn't beaten yet. That was incredible. That was just such a great line.
Listen, you and I are sold on the Worldwide Underground. All right, we have been for a while.
Yeah, I love
the
that.
Members of the Jontourage, for citizens of Slamtown.
I loved it, though, that just whatever. Dario even calling them that is just showing that even he just thinks they're a bunch of pricks still. So.
Well, are they not a group of pricks?
They are. They absolutely are.
See that with
are.
One of the vignettes in the next episode.
Yeah, they absolutely
like, what
are.
What a group of a-holes, and they're kind of running things now since Mundo is champion.
Yep. from there, we got another vignette with we got Reyes, Officer Reyes, going into Captain Vasquez. And, you know, he's got the broken arm and he's like, you know, Dario knows I'm a rat. And she's just like, well, I think you're going to have to go deeper undercover. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't think you really understand what's been going on here, is that he's going to kill him if he goes back to that temple. But she did mention how Joey Ryan, she doesn't trust him anymore and everything like that, that he's a bad person, which made me sad. But
yeah,
I think she's wrong. I think deep down, Joey Ryan's a good man. And I think he's going to prove it. And he's going to come through aces in the end.
I don't know about that.
He's got child support to pay. She says he's going to have to go deeper undercover, at which point, again, I was like, man, she doesn't get it. But then she reaches into her desk and pulls out a luchador mask. And I don't know if I'm alone on this, but I'm super excited to see now Reyes go undercover as a masked luchador. I think it's awesome. I kind of hope that they do a good job of hiding who he is. I mean, obviously by his moveset, you know, it'll become more apparent, but I hope I'm surprised. I mean, we'll figure it out in short order, but I like the idea of this. Just going undercover as a luchador is pretty awesome.
I'm very excited for this. When she pulled out the mask, I was thinking, hey, yeah, maybe we should have just been doing this with our undercover cops all the way to begin with.
Completely agree.
When I rewatched this vignette, I was also thinking, oh, hell, remember how she's immortal?
Yeah, we haven't gotten a follow-up on that.
We really haven't had anything with that anymore.
The amulet seems like it was from like a season ago, but it was from earlier on this season.
Yeah, it was like in September. So we really need to get the ball rolling with some more storytelling with that.
Oh, it'll come back around, and I'm very intrigued by Jeremiah Crane's in involvement in Katrina and everything like that. But yeah, I like the idea of this whole undercover luchador mask deal. It would be hilarious if they tried it with Joey Ryan and just his chest hair and oil gives him away immediately. Yeah. but be that as it may, you could just see the mustache from the his mask. It'd be like when Hulk Hogan was Mr. America. It just was the biggest farce. We then got Sexy Star versus PJ Black. What did you think of the match? A couple moments stood out to me.
What I'm going to say is I like PJ Black.
Yeah.
And with these two episodes, I'm happy with all the play and attention that PJ Black is all of a sudden getting. It's great, because at this point I would consider him the member of the Worldwide Underground that we don't know that much about. He's also kind of like the default character, because Johnny's the leader, you know, and then you got Taya, she's the girl. And then you have Jack, who's kind of like the little arrogant shit one. And it's like, well, who's PJ, you know?
Who is PJ?
Well, I guess he's a chauvinist. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
he's going to get Sexy Star.
Dude, seriously, because he was very brazen about it. The thing that stood out to me most was when he wheelbarrowed her and then was just like thrusting and knocking her head into the turnbuckle. I was disgusted by him. It's like, this is our former champion, you son of a bitch. Like, show some respect. But he did hit her with a sick Styles Clash, though. I liked that a lot. So, yeah, he hit her with that sick Styles Clash. But then Jack Evans, as he is wont to do and help out his Worldwide Underground teammate, came in to try and make the save as Sexy was rallying, but only served to distract PJ and get rolled up. So Sexy Star did prevail. She will get a title match against Johnny Mundo in a cage in a couple weeks. Well, I guess now, as you're hearing this in the next episode. So that is awesome. Of course, as Jeff has said, there's no way Sexy was going to lose that match. We went from there to one of my favorite moments of all season, something I have been waiting for since we saw the trailer, and it finally arrived in this episode, The Bulls of Boyle Heights. Cobra Moon in her snake throne, very Serpentor-esque from G.I. Joe, very Masters of the Universe, the Snake Man.
King Hiss, yeah.
Yes. It was her addressing her sort of generals, but still minions, and dropping some Snake Tribe lore on them. What did you think of this, Jeff? Because I was freaking out in a good way. I loved this.
Well, I know you're a fan of the lore, so I knew you were definitely slurping this up. I love Lucha Underground lore. I think it's great. I would love to see flashback scenes if they would do that. One thing about Cobra Moon, and I know the trailer for this season kind of gave it away, I guess, since she was sitting in a throne. I wish she wasn't the leader of the Snake Tribe. And I have a few reasons for that. One, and which is probably the most important one, she hasn't really been that impressive in the ring since her debut. She got her ass kicked by Drago really fast during Aztec Warfare. I just don't think of her as that intimidating or fearsome. And then another thing I was thinking of with all of the women in Lucha Underground is any woman that's either not on her own, like Sexy Star or Ivelisse, all of the women are like kind of in leadership positions or like lieutenant positions. Like Ty is second in command, only to Mundo. And the only woman I can think of who's not a leader is Brenda. I would have liked this to be an example of a henchwoman, which we haven't had yet.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been perfect with a Snake character, because then it's like, can you trust her? Can you not trust her? I could see her even pulling a double cross on the Snake tribe, but now she's the establishment. That's not going to happen.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think it would have been cool, and I think it would have made it a deeper female character rather than it's like all of them. Because if you look at Katrina, she's obviously in control of the Immortus.
I'd like to.
All of the women are composed the Black Lotus tribe, but I mean, it's female led. Ivelisse was kind of even bossing both Angelico and Son of Havoc around when they were a team.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of who. And like I said, with Taya, yeah, she's second to Mundo, but she definitely tells PJ and Jack what to do.
Absolutely. And rightfully so.
No, and that's fine. I don't think it's wrong for any of those women to be in the positions they're at. I just think it would be kind of cool, though, if we had a woman who was more of just like one of the foot soldiers or something. I think it would be a foot soldier who then answers to a male character as opposed to the Lotus tribe, because obviously those women are just soldiers as
well.
Yeah,
well, you know what's funny is that even though it was given away in the trailer, it was interesting that when she first described Pindar, I thought it was her superior that she was describing.
That's what I was thinking too, the way she described him, and I think that would have been awesome. Also, with the way these guys ended up being, I would still have her, because of her outfit and stuff, be the spokesperson. She could do the talking,
yeah,
and they're more snake-like. And speaking of Masters of the Universe, I was thinking of her as more of a Cobra Khan type character, who, if you're looking at all of the snake men, definitely lower on the totem pole than some of the others, but also perhaps the most important character, because he's the one who tricks Skeletor, and he's the one who I think ends up like betraying King Hiss and all of them too. I would have liked her to be like that, because I feel like with the snake tribe, you shouldn't be able to trust any of them. They should also be turning on each other constantly, because it's in their nature.
I like that. I mean, I love this vignette though, and I thought the set design was rad. I loved looking at Pindar and Vibora. I thought they looked great. And just this whole, again, the snake tribe lore. She wants Drago to kneel before her. So Drago at one point was in the snake tribe, apparently, according to her, if we're to believe her story.
He's the general that abandoned them.
Yes, but they still live on somehow.
But he was a slave, I thought. Like, he's kind of against. It's weird that he was rank of general, but yeah, he didn't feel like he was an equal member of the tribe.
Some weird snake-like things going on. I don't know.
Oh, and then also, just speaking of strong women, honorable mention of Mariposa too, who's the greatest warrior of the Moth tribe. That's another example that I was thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. But I love that, and we'll get to see more from them in short order in the next episode we're going to talk about tonight, which was awesome. But from there, we got Matanza and Dario Cueto. And my main takeaway from this vignette at the start of it was like, man, like, you know, Dario's asking, you know, Matanza, are you sure you don't want to be in this Battle of the Bulls? It's like kind of made for you. You'll probably really enjoy it. And I was just thinking to myself, I was like, Dario's a really good older brother. You know, when you
I
get down to it.
I did not expect this.
You know, he like actually is a really good older brother, right?
These past two vignettes, I thought Dario's been really sweet with him, and I didn't think they had that kind of relationship. Maybe this is, we're getting a different perspective on the Dario character, and this will be important in case things get sour later on, and Dario will have to turn face a little bit against a higher power, Lorenzo Lamas' boss.
Yeah, I guess so.
Also, it was really sweet and touching until Matanza smashed his head.
Yeah, that's why we can't have nice things. Yeah, it was, because, you know, Dario's basically, you know, I'd hate to see you travel down that path of revenge and get consumed by it like Azteca did. And then he's just like rubbing his hand from the cell through Dario's hair and then just smash right into the cell. And, well, Matanza got the keys and is on the loose, so that's not good.
That's why we don't bring the key that close to the cage if we're not going to open it, Dario.
Yeah, that was scary. That was a good scene, though. I liked that
That's
a lot.
That's why we put the hook on the wall on the other side of the room.
Yeah, exactly.
You come in, put the key over there.
That's the whole reason for it, Dario, but it is pretty stylish around his neck. So, yeah, Matanza is out, and it was then time for the second Battle of the Bulls match of the evening where we got Marty the Moth, Dragon Azteca, the Mac, and Mil Muertes with the Inferno of Hotness, Katrina. What did you think of this match?
I don't want to be a jerk, but I think this is probably my least favorite of the Battle of the Bulls matches. Maybe it partly just has to do with the finale.
Yeah.
Also, maybe I just haven't been paying attention, but I didn't realize that Dragon Azteca Jr. was a member of the Eagle Tribe. I didn't know what the hell the Eagle Tribe was. So I was just, once again, inclusion of more animals. I was very excited.
Well, it's kind of, it doesn't really jump out to you that he'd be the Eagle Tribe, considering his name is Dragon Azteca, you know, and how he would fit in perfectly with the Snake Tribe in terms of his movements and everything, you know, and his build, I feel.
Yeah, he's got that kind of fighting style and look.
But he's not. He's Eagle Tribe, bro, so.
Well, he's a good guy, and eagles are more, you know, it's a good guy animal.
Yeah, we're good guys. But yeah.
Not bad guys.
I feel you on that. I definitely thought this match had some high spots, though, that were really good. Like the Tijuana DDT that Dragon Azteca hit, I believe it was on the Mac, was insane. Like just tossing him up in the air and then coming down in the DDT, that move is incredible. Marty really showing his insanity with Mil Muertes, just asking him to hit him, and then, like, obviously, you know, he no-sells one, and then Mil just starts taking his head off. And I thought of you, and I thought of the movie Beer League, because Vampiro says that every one of those hits from Mil Muertes would have left Yankee Stadium, and Matt Stryker just goes, number two, Mil Muertes. Number two. And so I thought about you and Beer League with number one, Needle Dick. Number one.
I love that.
But so that was great. We saw Dragon Azteca's youth show itself in this. Like, again, the psychology of this is great, is that he hit a Mil with the big move off the top, and then he didn't go for a cover. It was like, I'm going to do it again. And that allowed the running rampant Matanza to come in and blow up the match, and there's no DQs, and he gave Dragon Azteca maybe the best Wrath of the Gods yet, just smack dab center on the seal, and he got some good height on it before, and how he tossed him around, that was great. And then from there, we saw a bloody Dario running down, and you know what the first thing that went through my mind was as he had the rag up on his face?
What?
I said, I hope he saved Big Rick's eye patch. So I was thinking, I was like, I wonder if he's going to be
the kind of callback they would make.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I was thinking, though. I was like, I hope his eye's all right. And if not, I hope he saved that patch. Because he referenced it earlier in the season. You know, he did put out his eye. Maybe it was Big Rick. So we'll see what happens there. But poor Dario chasing down Matanza. And then we got who was going to win this match? I did not expect, and it was the Mac with a cross-country stunner that pulled it out, and I didn't think that they were going to go with the Mac here. I was surprised in a good way.
I like the Mac. He definitely is more imposing than sometimes he's given credit for. I also feel that he is going to be the filler character in the next round of Battle of the Bulls.
Well, here's something that I thought of, is that we know Sexy Star is going to get her Lucha Underground championship match with Johnny Mundo in a cage. What if Sexy Star wins that and the Mac wins the Battle of the Bulls? That is going to put two friends against one another, which, you know, Dario loves so greatly and Lucha Underground loves to give to us. So that is something to think about as well, I feel.
Yeah, watch out, Mac. The last time she went against one of her friends, she unmasked him in the ring.
Wow, that is cold-blooded. You're not wrong.
Yeah,
you're not wrong at all. But that concluded the Bulls of Boyle Heights. Again, I thought it was a really enjoyable episode. I thought the first match and the vignette with Cobra Moon, and then the vignette with poor sweet older brother Dario is what really carried the day in this episode. Those were the highlights to me, especially the Snake Tribe stuff is great to me. I love G.I. Joe, and just it reminds me of Cobra Commander and Serpentor and all that jazz. It's just so cool to me. I want that throne is awesome. I dug that so much. That was definitely my why I love Lucha moment of the episode.
We're definitely children of the 80s and 90s because, yeah, you thought of G.I. Joe and I thought of Masters of the Universe immediately.
I think
that's why we both gravitated towards it. Yeah, hey, snake men are evil. We know that.
Yeah.
All right, we were raised on it.
There's more coming with that because we do have another episode to talk about before we get out of here. Again, this is a double dose of your Lucha Lowdown and Lucha Underground coverage. But before we do that, time to take care of a little business. And that is to tell you that we really appreciate you listening to Lucha Lowdown. And, you know, please tell your friends about it. Tell them to subscribe to us on iTunes, on Audio Boom. Please follow us on social media at Lucha Lowdown on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. We really do appreciate that. And rate us and review us on iTunes is the biggest thing you can do. I know all the podcasts tell you to do that. That's because it's important. It helps us out. We've loved the listener response so far. It's been really great. And just to tease something that's coming down the works up here in San Francisco for the radio station I work for, we did just interview the king of Lucha Libre, Rey Mysterio, which I will be putting out on Lucha Lowdown as a special episode as well. That was a lot of fun. Rey was really great and just a class act, and talked about some interesting things that I actually really wanted to ask him about that I hadn't gotten a good explanation of before. So I hope you enjoy that as well. And if you want to get a hold of us, again, at Lucha Lowdown on Twitter. You can email us, luchalowdown@gmail.com. We love all the interaction with the Believers. We love Lucha Underground, and we know you do too. Thank you for all the support. iTunes, subscribe, rate, review. Thank you very, very much. Did I miss anything, Jeff?
No, I think that's it.
All right, Jeff thinks that's it. So let's get into part two. We are going to move on now to the second episode of this back-to-back Lucha Lowdown recap, and that is we're going to be talking about the episode En Las Sombras. Overall, what did you think of this episode?
This one I really liked. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed both Battle of the Bulls matches immensely. And then, I mean, I don't want to spoil it too much, but I also enjoyed the snake stuff.
Yes.
And there was a vignette with the Worldwide Underground that I just thought was delightful.
Okay, well, let's get into it. I agree with you. This one featured, as much as I loved the first Battle of the Bulls match from the previous episode, the one that kicked off tonight's episode was my favorite one that they've done. I enjoyed this one so thoroughly. It was Jeremiah Crane, Killshot, Dante Fox, and Mariposa. And I thought everyone got to really shine in this one. And I thought, just some quick takes off this, Mariposa's best showing since the No Mas match, and maybe even better than that for her, because the storytelling did revolve in that match so much around Sexy Star's triumph. I thought this was a really great sort of coming out party again for Mariposa. And Jeremiah Crane continues to just impress me. He's another guy that, like, when I saw him in NXT, I wasn't that high on him. But Lucha Underground has really given him the platform to shine and really let his strength show. And I've thoroughly enjoyed him, other than the fact that I hate that he's dating Ivelisse because I want Ivelisse to be a Son of Havoc. And Crane's character is kind of a douche. Him in the ring is awesome. And all the stuff with Katrina now adds this whole other layer. And so I really don't know what to make of this guy, but, and Dante Fox continues to impress, and Dante Fox almost to me is coming off more and more sympathetic, every week with this feud with Killshot somehow. And I don't know why exactly, but that's just the way I sort of feel about it. What did you think about all the participants?
Oh, well, before I forget, let me just comment on what you said about Dante Fox. I think the expression on Dante Fox's face at the end of the match towards Killshot, when Killshot couldn't take it anymore, that made him look very sympathetic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, I was thinking, I was like, you know what, Killshot, maybe this is just that other chance to extend the olive branch or to do your best to just part ways. Maybe you just leave the ring.
Yeah, no,
and
I agree.
More you do that, you know, you could decrease the behavior, this undesired behavior of him attacking you.
Yeah, at this point, it's kind of on you too, you know? Like,
and I mean, you have to look at it from Dante Fox's perspective. We don't know enough yet about exactly what their backstory is, but it sounds like, at least from what he thinks, what he believes happened, Killshot left him for dead.
Yeah.
Now Killshot wasn't a coward or anything like that. It seems like Killshot honestly thought Dante Fox was dead behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
Or something like that, and was legitimately happy when he saw his friend again. So I just, it kind of breaks my heart. I don't think these two should be on opposing sides. It's unfortunate what's happened.
Well, maybe they will join together again someday. Who knows?
That would be cool. I just also want to echo what you said about Jeremiah Crane. I am so impressed with this guy every time he's in the ring, and I was not a fan of his the first couple times he showed up this season, just because he does come off as a real tool. His character is a real tool.
Yeah.
And the vignettes, you know, it's just not a fan. You and I, we already ship Ivelisse with Son of Havoc, yes. So that's where we're at.
Great use of the term ship.
Exactly. And, yeah, I think his character is just a lot deeper than we thought, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that,
so I'm excited there.
That vignette with Katrina really changed me around on his out-of-the-ring character, too, because I was like, there's a whole other side of this guy that I never would have expected. So that was an eye-opener, and I feel like this is going to only end badly for Evie. In the ring, he's insane. Like he's doing terrific work in the ring. Some of the things that really stood out to me in this were the use of the chairs in this was incredible.
Dude, I cringed because I couldn't help but think, what if something went wrong and the way everybody was landing, I was really nervous for Killshot because I was afraid he was going to break his spine.
Yeah, no, there was a moment where even Matt Stryker in commentary was talking about how, you know, they had set up the chairs. I forget who it was. It might have been Killshot. And then one fell and landed legs up. And that's I think, when they did the crazy, like, double powerbomb plex from the corner through all the chairs. And it's like, man, dude, like, that is – there's so many risks these guys and girls are taking in that ring that just – I mean, hats off to them. It looked incredibly vicious. I hope no one got hurt. But, I mean, the chairs played a prevalent role, which is something that stood out. Then there was a moment right after that, I feel like, that what I called the kick party, which is there's just
the loud kicks.
Yes. That was awesome to me. I love that.
It was delightful.
That was incredible. One of the real standout moments of the episode to me. I'm glad that you picked up on that too, because it was just everybody was just literally kicking each other in the face, and it was absurd, but in like the best way possible. And Crane's kicks are something that really stood out to me too, is that That guy knows how to do those. That is for sure on that end. And he was really shining in this match. And then the other really big spot for this was Mariposa giving Killshot the butterfly effect on the chair. Holy crap, that looked like it hurt. That was insanity.
Yeah, I wrote that one down too. It just looked gruesome. And it was just another example of Killshot on a chair. And I was just seriously, my skin was crawling just watching that stuff because it was so intense.
Yeah, it was great action. It felt very ECW with just even just the sheer number of the chairs they were bringing in just brought back memories of when all the fans were throwing chairs into the ring back in the day in ECW and everything like that. Mariposa, Mariposa literally just throwing chairs at people at one point in the match. I really appreciated that too.
Talking about having a relationship with her. I don't know about you, but I was having flashes of some fights with ex-girlfriends because she was just running around the ring, chucking chairs at anything that moved.
Oh, man. Yeah, there'd be no having her. And then eventually...
Take her mask off. I may have dated her before.
Well, you don't know. That's true. Jeremiah Crane eventually picked up the win with the cranial contusion, which... I mean, big win for Crane early on in his Lucha Underground tenure here, and I think well-deserved. One of the things, and Matt Stryker pointed it out on commentary, I loved, and it was a classy move by the crowd, just chanting everyone. I thought that was really cool by them. Good on the Lucha Underground crowd for doing that. And then Killshot, like you talked about earlier, post-match, went and started beating down Dante Fox some more. I don't know what to make.
He's at his wit's end with this guy. He couldn't take it. Had to finish him off.
But it's like a four-way match, bro. It's like we had to fight. You know, it's not like I picked this. So I don't know. We'll see.
I think that's how he looks at it, though.
They got to be building to another WMD match is what I'm thinking there.
Which is going to be awesome. I was also thinking of it as I was watching. Dante Fox once again reminds me of like that in a fighting game, there's characters that have similar move sets, but they're different. Like their stats are slightly different. And where, like, Killshot seems a little lighter on his feet and seems more precise with his moves, Dante Fox seems, like, a little heavier in some of the things he does. So he really does remind me of, like, a Ken Masters to Killshot's Ryu. Or like I said, they're like Guile and Charlie.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that assessment. They are like, they're very Mortal Kombat in this sort of, like, just palette swap, too.
Totally. But like I said, I think the changes are just slightly there. It's one of the things that you'd find in like one of the later games where they really try to make everybody slightly unique, and it's like that's what it is.
Yep.
It's I don't know, man. I prefer the more precise movements of a kill shot because I'm really good with the combos, so I'm gonna choose kill shot instead.
Yeah, I'm really digging Dante Fox though, and what he's brought to the ring. Dude, so far.
He's awesome. And I really like his addition. If anything, it's just help Killshot, who I think has had an amazing season 3 so far.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to more with them. Bring on another Weapons of Mass Destruction match. You and I adored the first one.
It's
one of the best matches we've had in Lucha history. So, yeah, keep it coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, Jeff, you mentioned it earlier. One of the vignettes that we both loved. Taya's continuing documentary on the Worldwide Underground, as it were. Just tell me about this vignette and why you loved it so much.
The reason why I loved it is I love the rapport and chemistry between all the members of the Worldwide Underground. They really do just seem like friends, and so they make a solid team. They also have like very similar personalities. It's almost like watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, because they are just like four selfish, arrogant, horrible people.
Yeah.
And so they kind of do belong together.
Yeah, no, completely agree.
I like the documentary angle with Taya, especially since she still seems to be out of commission, so it's given her something that she can do.
Yeah, and keeping her
on
camera.
I also love that PJ and Jack are such morons that she can't even get them to like do an interview properly while she's trying to film it.
Yep.
They just don't take anything seriously. They're just two jackasses sitting there.
I loved Mundo then coming in and dropping what I called hard truths on them for not being able to get the job done against Sexy Star. And then him posing when she was like toward the camera, babe, and just him posing like,
and now he's
so- how do you feel about being a part of the greatest group in professional wrestling? And just his whole inflection. But when he dropped the line, he's like, if you don't get it done, you have to turn in your sweet bandanas and find a new crew.
First off, so those bandanas are sweet. And then second, I was thinking to Johnny, look no further. You got two new members right here who are willing to do it.
Very true.
It's like, I'm not saying I could kick Sexy Star's ass either, but I will grapple with her one-on-one.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to see Ricky Mandel, we think, join them eventually, I guess.
Soon, right?
I don't know when. But yeah, that scene was great. And that is definitely a why I love Lucha moment from this week. They, like you said, their chemistry is off the charts. And it's... what a delight. Those gringos get it. They're really funny together. And just the air guitaring and everything, it's awesome. You put that when they say you can put that in post, right? I thought of us too. Oh, so good. So good. And then from there we got Sexy Star training in the locker room, and she finds
training / contemplation montage. So I looked at it.
Absolutely. Well, then when she's going through her locker, she finds an itsy bitsy, and by itsy bitsy, I mean not itsy bitsy at all. She finds like a damn tarantula in her locker room, and she's not stoked on that. Jeff, I don't think you would be either.
No, I was terrified just watching it on TV. I was just thinking, wrestling school's so hard on everybody, isn't it? And she's getting picked on.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she gets picked on a lot, I feel like.
And then what happens in the hallway
from the locker room after she found the spider? We get Cobra Moon versus Drago. Again, this is following up on the Snake Tribe vignette from last week. And you know, it was not Drago was winning a lot of the match. Again, like Jeff, like you alluded to, they've not let Cobra Moon be very dominant. I like how she is in the ring. Like, she does all the slip, like she's selling the fact that she's Snake Tribe very well in her matches. It's just they have not let her, she has not had many moments to shine in terms of like beating people and stuff like that. You know, her sort of destruction of Daga was done off camera.
And then apparently she wasn't even the one who may have done it.
Yeah. Well, she probably fed him to Pindar apparently.
I guess she needs to start spitting venom in someone's face or something like
I'd like that. Yeah. If they did the green mist gimmick with her, that would be very welcome. I'd like that a lot. That's a good call.
Yeah.
So we get this match ending in a disqualification because Pindar shows up and starts beating down Drago, and then his trio's champions, you know, Phoenix and Aerostar, come out to help, and Pindar, who is a cool-looking sort of reptilian Snake Tribe member in his own right, he looks like very much so like, I feel like, one of the reptiles from V is kind of what I think of with Pindar a little bit. And then so as the Trios champions are trying to make the save is when we get Vibora, who is insanely big for Lucha Underground. He's a tall snake.
He's a Luchasaurus.
Yeah, that's what the crowd was chanting at him, Luchasaurus. What did you think of these guys' debut in the ring and everything like that?
Well, first, I love that Phoenix and Aerostarhead Drago's back.
Absolutely. They have to.
Yeah, exactly. These guys are fearsome, man. These are some really tough giant snakes. I'm glad. I want the snake tribe to be a dominant force. I would also like to see them go after the rabbit tribe at some point. But
I saw somebody say that online, too. He's like, I worry that they'll swallow them whole.
Well, and then I feel the rabbit tribe, though, with like its powers of magic and illusion, like, you know, it would be them like hiding in the holes and scurrying away and things like that.
I'd love it if their numbers just grew exponentially, too. There's just like,
well, that's how they attack everybody, is in like these huge swarms. So that's their style. That would be terrific. But I thought the debut of them was great. It was very dominant. Drago got annihilated. And then I love that they captured Drago. And then I think it was Stryker. And you and I have talked about this before with Lucha Underground as far as the commentary. I love how casually he just said, leaving with his body, perhaps his soul. Maybe they captured his soul. We don't know. That's just an everyday thing here at Lucha Underground.
It's true.
I love that stuff.
Hey, you got medallions that grant immortal life. You know, some say you got people capturing souls. It's just another day at the office.
Well, and that was like a spaceman and a phoenix that came to save him. So, I mean, there's bizarre shit going on in the ring.
It's true. It's very true.
Why it's funny whenever they reference something like Legion of Doom or whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, man, this is the same universe as like regular wrestling still.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, it's way older because it's Lucha Libre and there's a lot of lore and a lot of supernatural stuff to be talked about, which I appreciate. I liked the double choke slam and the tombstone, everything like that. I hope they don't bite the Undertaker too hard with him, but he is an imposing presence for sure within the Snake Tribe. We then got the payoff to Sexy Star finding the spider in a locker. Well, at least the next part of the story was Sexy finding the spider in a locker. She assumes it was Mariposa, who very creepily was walking by her and reached out for her hair. And my first thought, though, was, man, there's something sexy about Mariposa and those pigtails and the mask. I don't know what it just is.
Pigtails, and she was wearing her street clothes. I thought she looked great.
She did.
Yeah.
I was into it.
Very sexy.
And so Sexy Star then was giving her the business, though. It's like, it's funny because Sexy Star really did, I feel like, beat Mariposa down to the point where, you know, Mariposa was not backing down from her, but it was clear that Sexy Star had established that she was the alpha in their relationship after that No Moss match, you know? And I thought, I thought this might have been Sexy Star's best promo to date. Like when she was talking about how, you know, when I beat you in No Moss, you know, next time you won't even have the breath to scream out anything. I thought that was awesome. But does this mean there's perhaps a spider tribe on the horizon that's going to derail all of this?
Oh, God. I hope not.
Not a fan of spiders, Jeff?
No, I'm not. They're my snake if I was Indiana Jones. I also just like that Mariposa spoke, which I don't think she's ever spoken before.
I'm not sure if she has.
Well, I guess she screamed No Mas, but yeah, other than that, I don't remember.
Fuck you, Mariposa!
But I was thinking the same thing that Mariposa was saying was, you know, spider's not her M.O.
Yeah, like, she'd be a beautiful butterfly.
What a creepy family.
It is a creepy, creepy family, but I love them for it. They're great. They're delightful.
Oh, no, they're so much fun.
So there was that. Then we get the final first round of the Battle of the Bulls tournament, which was Jack Evans, PJ Black, and Helico, and Son of Havoc. And right off the bat, I'm sure you thought the same thing. Cool seeing two-thirds of one of our favorite trios in the ring together again with Son of Havoc and Helico.
First time in forever. And then I was thinking that was an interesting dynamic for this Battle of the Bulls because you kind of had two sets of natural allies. Also, maybe I imagined this and I didn't rewatch it. Did Vampiro call PJ and Jack two jerk-offs?
I think he might have, yes.
Yeah, which is great.
That sounds about right. I'm not going to fact check it, but that sounds right. I'm going to go with it. I think, yes, probably said that. And they acted like it in this match thoroughly, for sure. Some of the things that stood out to you in it?
All right. One thing that I was thrown off by the way, right away in the match was, why would Jack and PJ not try to pin each other immediately just to make it so that Angelico and Son of Havoc cannot win this match?
Well, did you watch the documentary?
No.
They're not the brightest bulbs.
I just feel like maybe Mundo should have told them, like, you know, PJ gets this one or Jack gets this one. Just do it. Like, all you have to do is lure Angelico and Son of Havoc out of the ring, beat them enough where they can't run back in. The two of you slide back in real fast, do a quick three count.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of that. And then one of my favorite things was the double turtle stomp by Son of Havoc.
I think that was my favorite thing in the whole match, just even calling it the double turtle stomp. It looked like it was awesome. That was such a great move to do.
He's only like two or three stomps away from a one-up, if I remember my
and he's so
correctly.
Small, too. He's like Mario, so it was, yeah. It was great.
He should have jumped on Jack, then kick him towards the corner, and then jump on Jack again as he bounces off of the corner.
It would have been great if in post, if they had like just added like the mushroom popping up sound effect in post for this episode or something like that. That would have just been super funny. But yeah, I like the
shades of a different wrestler.
The turtle stomp as well. Just everything. Just watching Angelico in this match. I feel like he has such huge star potential with Lucha Underground to be one of the faces of that company. Like he's great. I love the trio of Ivelisse, Son of Havoc, and Angelico. Angelico definitely has future world champion written on him, though, and I think that's just so apparent in this match. He's a star, that guy.
He has a great look. I like that he's getting more to say in the vignettes, and I've always enjoyed his fighting style. Because he's so lanky, he's always been able to do those kicks kind of out of nowhere, which is terrific. And I kind of like when he does like a spin bicycle kick or something like that, when it seems like he's in just a totally defensive position. And then I enjoyed his match that we saw live against Johnny Mundo. And I'm looking forward to the rivalry between him and Mundo picking up here on the show and us getting, you know, better matches and more intense matches than you can do in a live event.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And then, so as you alluded to, is that after they had beaten them down, it finally dawned on them to do the finger poke of doom sort of finish, as what Matt Stryker called it. PJ Black beckoning Jack Evans, hey, just pin me. And then, but Evans pulled the swerve and rolled him up instead and got the three count, got the win. So he's going on to the next round. But Jack Evans just screaming into the camera, he teabagged me.
I mean, out of the two, PJ would be the brighter one, right?
Yes, I think so at this point.
And PJ's character is really starting to come into his own these past two episodes. And I think he's a real scumbag.
He is,
and I love it.
He is a scumbag. And the other moment that I wanted to reference that I forgot about was when they did the big dump and tossed Son of Havoc. Son of Havoc they tossed out of the ring? Or was it both
was Son
of them?
Havoc. Yeah.
So they tossed Son of Havoc out of the ring. Yeah, and then Stryker's just be sure to flush twice. And like Vavre's like, did you say big dump? And they're just such douchebags. They are jerk-offs, like Vampiro might have said. But yeah, PJ Black got the win in this. So next week, for all the marbles that is the title shot, it is going to be PJ Black, Jeremiah Crane, the Mac, and Cage in a Fatal 4-Way Elimination match. Jeff, who do you got?
All right, this is what I was talking about about the previous episode. All right, so they do this match next week, right?
Yes.
Did they say when they get a shot at Mundo or whoever the champion is?
I do not believe so.
Let's say Cage wins. Then Cage wins best of five against Tejano. And so it's not Cage getting a title shot. It's whoever this god entity is inside Cage's body.
Ah, he'll be unstoppable.
Exactly.
And then Cage, or whatever it dwells in him, becomes Lucha Underground champion.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that they did. You're right.
It gets that god a title shot immediately. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, you didn't say. They didn't say when, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, so you're taking Cage.
Yeah, as far as I think how the storyline's going to go. Because, all right, yeah, I'm sorry. Who did you say it was? It's the Mac, it's PJ Black.
And Jeremiah Cage, Crane.
And Jeremiah Crane. Yeah, out of those four, I think I would still take Cage, even just from a story perspective. Cage deserves title shots.
I agree, and he's got a long-standing feud with Johnny Mundo already before, so it would be a nice callback to that. And even in the title match, maybe Tejano got involved or something. I'm going to go out of limb. I'm going to say the Mac wins. I'm going to say it's going to be the Mac. I'm saying the Mac wins. He gets it done, and he's going to get a title shot here. Not his first, right, because he was in the Dario's Dial of Doom, if I'm not mistaken, earlier this year, I believe. So you're taking Cage. I'm saying the Mac. I think your bet might be. I think I'm getting better odds. So if my pay's off at Vegas, I think I think I'm getting more money back on that play. But we'll see what happens next week. But to close out the show was Azteca, back with Rey Mysterio, who is on the mend, in Rey's dojo, as it were. And
I thought there was some sort of Japanese tea house. I didn't understand exactly what that location was.
Isn't that where they were meeting up before, like in last season? When he was,
it might have been. I don't remember.
I think that was the whole deal. So I think that's just Rey's like sort of Zen spot. But he's on the mend, and he's, you know, talking about, Azteca's talking about how the monster came for him, and Rey blames himself, and Azteca saying, no, I'm glad, you know, it showed me, you know, what I have to do, and you know, how, you know, what his purpose is in the temple. And Rey essentially tells him, he's like, you know, it's not for you. Like, you can't beat him. You can't win, kind of deal. And then going more Anakin mode, I guess, Azteca saying, sorry, Rey, the days of you giving me orders are over.
And then it's not even about winning.
No, he wants to kill Matanza.
Dude, yeah, Azteca is Anakin so much, it's frightening. All right, I mean, all I'm getting is shades of Obi-Wan and Anakin with these two.
Yeah, and Rey did not look pleased. So Rey's probably... There's so much going on with that. We have not seen Chavo Guerrero back. I don't know what's going to happen with that whole feud and everything, but very interesting stuff going on, I feel, with them. And we'll see how long it's going to take Rey to get back. Rey's going to have to come back and probably bail out Azteca, but hopefully, I don't know. I don't want
to
see
Rey may have to come back before he's ready, and yeah, he's really going to get hurt, and it's going to be Azteca's fault.
That's kind of what I'm thinking as well. But we will see where that goes from there. Two great episodes of Lucha Underground, as always. Very exciting stuff moving forward. Again, sorry for the delay on the episodes, but you got yourself a double dose of the lowdown here, all wrapped into one. And again, we will also have that Rey Mysterio interview coming at you as soon as possible. But with that, that is going to do it for us here at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.